Joining us once again are our two guest political observers, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution, and David Brooks of The New York Times. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
First, if the Democratic primary contests are in fact coming down to Kerry in the lead with some opposition either from Edwards or Dean or possibly Wesley Clark, are there any conflicts here over issues or outlook or message among the Democrats, or are they essentially united? David?
I think they're essentially united. There used to be fights between the unions and the New Democrats, the DLC types, who were more centrist. And those fights are largely over because both those wings of the party have gone into abeyance. When you look at John Kerry, the guy's like Walmart. He carries everything. He's got every idea. Everyone is pleased by him, and he crushes all his competitors by taking up so much space.
You agree with that, EJ, that the Democrats are of one message now?
Yeah, I am struck by how much the Democratic message this year sounds like Tony Blair's message in Britain when he was first elected. And that message is the privileged few versus the many. And mathematics tells you that as a party, you'd rather be on the side of the many. And that message doesn't always work. I think it works now because there is this widespread perception of the Bush administration, even among many Republicans, even among some Republicans who support the administration, that on balance it tilts toward the very best off Americans, toward big companies. And that doesn't sound Marxist or radical. That sounds to a lot of Americans like a description of reality. And every single Democrat in his or her different way, Edwards most effectively with his "do we want to be one country or two countries" speech, is giving a version of that speech. And I think that unites Democrats.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that. First of all, Tony Blair was explicitly third way, trying to get beyond false choices of left and right. If it has any resemblance, what I hear Democrats saying to Tony Blair, it's in its shallowness. I mean, what Tony Blair said and what John Edwards and what John Kerry says when he talks about special interests is that the country's divided between these two Americas, 98% of America, which is us ordinary folks, and then the 2% of those powerful insiders. And the false hope held out by that is that if we could only get rid of those 2% of special insiders, we'd solve our problems.
But here's a difference. Here's the outline of a difference between the Democrats come the fall running against George Bush and the Republicans. Democrats saying the country is divided and unequal, things are unfair, special interests are in the saddle. That'd be one difference. The Republicans saying, no, we're all, our lot is all improving together through our policies, and we are not beholden to special interests any more than Democrats are to trial lawyers or something. What else? What else distinguishes these two parties as we look ahead to 2004?
Well, the biggest difference, I think, and what the election will turn on is the Republican view that we're a nation at war. And that to solve the problem of terrorism, we have to democratize the Middle East. I think for Republicans, it is still in large measure September 12th. When you go to Democratic events, September 11th seems a lot further away, and I don't think there's a general sense that we're a nation dominated by war.
You mean that we're in a war the size of the Cold War or the Second
right.
World War?
No, as Bush,
it didn't end in Afghanistan. President Bush always speaks of the war on terror to include Afghanistan, Iraq, and other operations.
Yeah, I think the administration's phrase is generational challenge, and I do think that's the way a lot of Republicans think.
E.J. Dionne?
I think the difference is on the strategy for overcoming terrorism. It's not about Democrats denying that there is a big problem here. In fact, John Kerry, one of the reasons I think he's emerged is that he has said repeatedly, I do not mind debating Bush on national security and terrorism. On the contrary, bring it on, as he says over and over. And I think it's the question is, what is the most effective way to fight the war on terrorism? Did we enter Iraq in the wrong way? Are we stuck in a difficult situation because we didn't seek out allies? There are a lot of Americans who want to fight the war on terror but are prepared to listen to an argument that says there's a better way to do it.
I guess my point would be it's about salience. It's about which issues are most important. And when I go to Democratic rallies or read every poll of the Democratic electorate, the war on terror is less salient than health care, jobs, and some other things. With the Republicans, it's more salient.
And that's partly because the Democrats draw more votes from lower and middle-income people who are really worried about the status of their health care, the status of their pensions, and the status of their jobs.
Well, that's not
so
quite
it is
right,
very salient.
Because if you look at the income gaps between Republicans and Democrats, there are no income gaps. Bush did extremely well with high school-educated whites who have no college. I don't think, if there may be differences, I don't think it's based on income.
So we have different views, you would both agree, about at least how the threat of terrorism should be dealt with and what this all amounts to, what the condition is that we live in now, and we have differences of point of view as to how divided or united the country is. Notions of leadership. Let's say it is John Kerry versus George Bush, which this week seems most likely. Who knows what it'll be next month? Radically different, or is it two sons of privilege, both educated at Yale, both went to private schools, similar training for national leadership, or is there some great difference here that I'm missing? David Brooks?
I actually don't think there's a great difference. I think if you look at the next 4 years, I think both Kerry and Bush would try to muddle through in Iraq. Neither would pull out, neither would greatly expand our presence. I think on the economy, both are going to have to be forced to deal with the deficit. I think there'd be a big difference on judges. But I think when you look at foreign policy, if you look at the things Richard Holbrooke, the presumed next Democratic Secretary of State, says, it sounds pretty much like what Colin Powell says.
The biggest difference that you can see is in their war records. And I think what's remarkable is how much attention not only John Kerry's war record is getting, but the fact that that is shedding new light on what President Bush did during the Vietnam War. Democrats were afraid of this issue. The notion of the unfairness of the sacrifice asked of Americans during Vietnam should have been a Democratic issue. But because Bill Clinton had avoided service in Vietnam, Democrats ran away from it. Now I think you're going to open up this national discussion. And I must say, if you go to Kerry events, those Vietnam veterans and other veterans who stand there are his most effective advocates.
Well, I don't deny that as long as the boomers are be around, we're going to debate Vietnam for as long as we live. We'll never get away with it. I don't think it's going to be as big an issue. It'll be a talking point, but less of a voting issue.
You figure, let the record show, you're saying that those Vietnam arguments are things that old people argue about, is what you're saying.
I wouldn't say old people. I'd say paunchy middle-aged people.
Thanks.
I am struck by how many young people I've talked to think about the question in this period after 9/11, where the issue of patriotism and service is a big deal to a lot of young people, how much it matters to them that somebody may have served and what they did.
E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and also of Georgetown University, and David Brooks of The New York Times, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.